Hi, and welcome to this edition of The Long View. I'm Dave Danielson, and I want to welcome you here tonight with our guest, Dennis DeLay. Dennis is the economist for the New Hampshire Center for Public Policy Studies. He's a native of New Hampshire, and he graduated from St. Anselm College and has been an economist for a number of different firms, organizations in the New Hampshire, around the New Hampshire area. He's also one of the largest contributing economists to the New England Economic Project, which is, as it would sound, a key institute for many of the large firms in the New England area. The population of New Hampshire, the United States, and the world continues to age. Not a surprise. Indeed, by 2030, there will be 20% of the population will be over 65. That's less than 20 years away. The questions and implications are many, and today we have Dennis DeLay, who's going to help us understand the implications of this change, which is already upon us and will continue for another 40 to 50 years. Dennis, before we get started, we probably should talk a little bit about the center, the institute, and can you tell us a little bit about its work?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me on, Dave.
Oh, you're
really
welcome.
Appreciate being here. The Center for Public Policy Studies is a not-for-profit, nonpartisan public policy shop. We're located in Concord, New Hampshire. You can see on the screen our website is nhpolicy.org. All of our reports are available on the website, including this presentation. We're a nonpartisan public policy shop, and we take that part of our mission very seriously. There are a lot of other so-called think tanks around that have a particular point of view or a political position. We don't. We're all about trying to provide better data so that public policymakers can make better choices. We look at state government, state budget, healthcare. We look at economics, obviously, that's sort of my specialty, corrections, crime, local governance. So any issue that's got a New Hampshire focus to it is something that we'd like to try to help advance the public policy discussion about that issue.
Excellent. Well, thanks. I appreciate, again, your coming over today.
Oh, sure.
The thing I think that's important, there'll be a lot of data on your slides, on your show tonight. And what I'd like you to be aware of is while that data is there, the idea is there, and Dennis is going to help us with this, is to understand what meaning does that data have for us out in the future. If you recall, the focus of our show is to try to stimulate ideas for the future. And with this data, which as you just said, for policy, I think it'll help us understand a little bit the ramifications of our aging. Dennis, what's really going to happen in terms of growth from the 64 plus age group for the next 20 years?
Well, the expectation is that we're going to see an increase in the portion of the population that's old over the age of 64. There's a little slide later on that where I've got a graphic of that shows what percentage of the population will be over the age of 64. By county. Before we get to that, maybe just to, we should focus a little bit about where New Hampshire has been. And there's a slide.
This slide. With the migration. There you go.
Yeah. Well, again, what you're looking at is the 10-year growth in population over the last several decades. So the way to read this slide is in 2010, we had about a 6.5% growth in the New Hampshire population from the year 2000. That's the slowest growth rate in New Hampshire population that we've had since the 1940s. You can see on the graph that in the 1980s, New Hampshire grew by about 25%. From 1980 to 1990, about 21%, 21% from 1960 to 1970. So what has distinguished New Hampshire is that it's been a very attractive place to live and to raise a family. That's led to a lot of population growth, mostly fueled by in-migration. But I think our fast-growing years are behind us at this point.
Mm-hmm.
We expect that the population will grow about not much faster than it grew in the last 10 years from now to 2020 and on to 2030.
Okay. Perhaps we should take a look at this next slide, which is looking at the population change, which is what the focus is of our program today. And we look at the increase of the population, and folks, that's not a mirage on your television. What's happening is you're seeing a change in the population from your left, which is under five, to your right on your screen, which is 85 plus.
Right, and this graph, what it does is it looks at the percentage of population in each of these five-year age groups. So, and it starts in the year 1900, it goes through 2010. So the way to, again, you can see the baby boomers come into the population back in the 1960s. Here we are in 2000. And you can see that the larger portion of the population is getting older. Here we are in 1920, a lot of children in the population. 1930, same thing. 1940, of course, are the war years. And in 1950, here come the baby boomers. You can see them in their teens here, in their 20s, in their 30s and 40s in 1990, in their 40s and 50s in the year 2000 and beyond. So again, what I think the way to really understand what's going on in the New Hampshire population is how that we're really aging in place. The people that were here and moved into the state in that graph that I showed you previously in the 60s, 70s, and 80s are still here. Mm-hmm. They're just getting older, and that's the big part of the population that we have to focus our attention on today, because those people, while they're largely in their early 50s and early 60s now, in 10 years will be in their early 60s and 70s, and beyond that they'll be older still.
Right. Now this data that we take is, because it's based on census data,
yes,
is a snapshot.
Yes.
It doesn't, I think we discussed the other day when we were talking, it doesn't consider the impacts of increased longevity or the decrease in the mortality rate. And what do you think affects those are going to have, an increase in longevity and the decrease in the mortality rate of that age group?
Well, I think, yes, again, what's really happening, and I think it's been a surprise to everyone, is that people have been living longer. And there are a lot of aspects to that, I think. People are tending to stay in the workforce longer. We're seeing labor force participation rates for people in their 50s and 60s increase compared to where they were a couple of years ago. It has broad implications for healthcare, because most of the healthcare that we consume is consumed in the later years of our lives. It's got other important policy implications for Medicaid and Medicare, obviously, and for Social Security as well.
Right. Are there any estimates for those crossing over the 65 area, for those that tend to stay in the workforce? You just mentioned that there's a number of folks who had, and I know in reading, preparing for today, that a lot of folks in the baby boomer group had decided to retire early or when their time came at 65, 62, 65, but now they're rethinking those choices.
Right. And I think we're going to see that continue, and we're going to see that increase over time. I mean, right now, as I said, we're already seeing an increase in what are called the labor force participation rates and employment to population ratios for people in their late 50s to early 60s. More and more of the people in those age groups are participating in the workforce and are working than we've seen in the 10 years prior to this or the 10 years prior to that. Part of that, I think, is due to necessity. As people live longer, they tend to use up, the retirement benefits that they probably initially compiled. Part of it, I think, is due to economic opportunity. We've moved as an economy from a largely agricultural society to an industrial-based society, with a lot of heavy lifting blue-collar jobs, and we've been moving over the last 30 or 40 years into what's called a knowledge-based economy, where what you think about and what you do with your mind is probably more important than what you do with your body. The hallmarks of that are things like the decline in manufacturing jobs as a percent of total jobs. We have fewer people employed in construction now than we might have had a few years ago. So the blue-collar, heavy-lifting jobs are going away. The white-collar, sort of non-gender-specific, knowledge-based jobs are increasing. One of the implications of that, I think, is that people are going to be able to stay in the workforce longer. The average blue-collar employee in a heavy-lifting job probably can't you know, probably had to retire in their 60s simply because of the physical demands of the job. Now we're looking at a workforce that's going to be employed in industries that are more based on what you know and probably have a lot more value attached to people that have been in the workforce for longer. So there's no reason, I don't think, why people in the late 50s, early 60s, maybe even their early 70s can't be productive members of the workforce.
Indeed, one of the reports I read said that, I think this was an insurance study that I was reading, said that some of the actuary folks were looking at the 70 being the new 65,
right,
which is the popular culture, being the 50 being the new 40s, or 40, yeah, 50 being the current 40s. They're looking at 70 being the 65 of the old days, which would make 75 and 80 not that far away.
I think that's exactly, you know, right.
Is there a difference between, when we talk about the boomers, we're talking about a group that was born, I think, 1946 and probably till 1961, 62, somewhere mm-hmm. in that area. Is there a qualifiable difference between boomers, older boomers, and, say, younger boomers? And let's use a differentiation of, say, 65 to 55 for the old group and the older group, and 45 to 55 for the younger group.
Well, I guess maybe I just have to take myself as an example. I'm in the older group. I'm 61 now. I was born in 1950. You know, I have brothers and sisters who were, obviously, I'm the oldest of my family. Both my wife and I have younger brothers and sisters, and I think their values are different. I think we were sort of the older boomers came of age in the 1960s, which was a tumultuous decade. There was a lot of upheaval, and I think that shaped the values that we, frankly, have carried into our 60s and 70s. I think the younger boomers probably, you know, came of age in the 1970s. That was a different time culturally. And I think they probably carried those values into the later years as well.
Okay. Does that affect the work ethic, do you think, going forward?
Yeah, I think it does. I mean, my generation of, you know, sort of older boomers are, you know, put a lot of emphasis on freedom in the workplace and the ability to do what you want to do and enjoy. I think people, frankly, came of age in the 1970s probably are thinking more about financial security and other things. So the values are a little different. Every major generation has a different set of values that really are formed on the basis of what was going on in society in their teenage years.
Right. And of course, we're being affected today because of the economy and the way folks are looking forward to looking at not only the economic changes, but also the social changes, the cultural changes that are
sure.
going forward. And again, how are those going to impact? I know it's hard to ask an economist, how are those impacts going to impact this group that we're talking about, the over 65 group, going into the future?
Well, I think the baby boomers, and again, we're already seeing indications of it. I think baby boomers are going to tend to work longer. I think the interesting dynamic, I think, will be how the fact that that the boomers are going to work longer and stay in the labor force longer, how that's going to impact people entering the labor force. You know, folks that are you know coming into the labor force in their teens and early 20s, and the kind of economic opportunity that will be available for them. We're already seeing labor market studies, which are tending to indicate that some of the older workers maybe are tending to force out of the labor force people in their late teens, early 20s. While, as I said earlier, while the labor force participation rates for people in the older age groups have been increasing, labor force participation rates for people in the younger age groups have been dropping. Some of that is due to, you know, more people going to college and so, you know, not being part of the labor force. Some of it is simply due to lack of economic opportunity for those folks.
Right. The study that I read said that what we're seeing is this is the first time, and again, you would be aware of this, this is the first time in history that we've had four generations looking for jobs at the same time.
Right.
I mean, that's fairly incredible when you think about it, particularly when you think about the economic situation we're in today.
All right.
You know, and just one more caveat, if I could, the things we're talking about actually are national issues as well and global issues as well. Some mm-hmm. of the things we've seen in Greece and France of late are based on these same things.
Right. Well, it's interesting. If you look at other countries, you can get somewhat of an indication of what we might be looking at here in this country in about another two or three decades. Mm. For example, Japan has one of the oldest populations in the world in an industrialized country. And again, by that measure, I'm talking about the percentage of the population that's over the age of 65. So if you look at Japan now, you perhaps can, net of the obvious cultural differences, but you can get a pretty good idea of what the labor force is going to look like, what the demographic makeup of the population is going to look like in the U.S. and in New Hampshire in about 20 years from now.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. One of the other things that I found, and you alluded to it, I think, in one of your prior comments, is as the boomers go into the 65 to 70-year-old folks are going in now, what are the chances they're going to be able to work at their dream jobs? One of the things I found was people who are now being forced out of the labor pool are taking a step back and saying, well, now I'll just do what I've always wanted to do. Could be teach, could be farm, could be a number of things that they've wanted to do. Have you seen that? Any kind of data that would?
I think, again, that's a function of sort of the cultural position of those age groups. I think for, maybe again, going back to what we were talking about before, for the older baby boomers, I think that becomes important to them. You know, again, mm-hmm. I think that generation was always looking for some sort of self-satisfaction or measure of self-worth that was outside of maybe monetary considerations. For the younger baby boomers, I think it's probably more of an issue, but it all depends upon financial security. No matter where you are in the demographic, your ability to be able to pick and choose what you want to do really depends upon your financial health. And, we have some really serious questions about that now, I think.
And that's the backside to the question about looking for a job that you've always wanted to do, is there's also an increased opportunity for entrepreneurs
yes.
out of this group. Mm-hmm. And I think, again, I may be thinking of the older boomers maybe than the younger boomers, but I think the older boomers think, well, my time has finished. But in fact, there may be a whole new generation that they may be able to start out here, and generation being the term of starting something.
Right.
You know?
Yep.
And I think that's pretty interesting. And again, hope for that generation as well, I think. Should go back on to your slides.
Yeah, we could, if you want to go to the next slide, just to, and we could go through these fairly
okay.
quickly. What you're looking at here is just the change in the last 10 years by geographic area in New Hampshire and population. And the quick message here is that the darker areas is where the population has increased faster.
Darker being faster.
Darker being faster. So southern New Hampshire along the Merrimack Valley, the seacoast are the fast-growing areas. The slow-growing areas are the areas that have even lost population are up in the north country and somewhat to the west. If you go to the next slide, there's now, the interesting thing is that even though we've seen an increase in the total population in New Hampshire, we've actually lost 22,000 school-aged children. So there are fewer 22,000 fewer 0 to 18-year-olds in New Hampshire now than there were 10 years ago. Now, that's not because the 18-year-olds got their license and picked up their brothers and sisters and drove someplace else.
Right.
These are children that were never born. So that's got some real implications, I think, for the growth in school districts and school funding. We just have fewer kids to educate now than we had 10 years ago, and it's likely to be fewer still in the next 10 years or
so. Is that related to the birth dearth that
people
spoke of?
It's really related to the fact that we have very low fertility rates in northern New England as a result of the demographic makeup of our population. So again, like I say, these are 22,000 kids, if you will, that were never born, and that's why they're not here compared to 10 years ago. And it's spread, you can see that it's spread everywhere. There are only a few towns in New Hampshire where they have more school-age kids than they had 10 years ago.
So is this counter to the idea that we're seeing a migration, an ex-migration of 18 to 30 year olds, 18 to 35 year olds?
No, it's not. It's not due to migration. It's due to the fact that that those kids weren't born. That we have very low levels of fertility, that fewer and fewer couples, even if they do marry, are having children or have fewer children than, you know, that I'm the oldest of seven, as I said. That was fairly common back in the 1950s. It's pretty uncommon today to see a family of more than one or two children. And one child is most common, I think.
If you go to the next slide,
this is just shows you the change in the Hispanic population in New Hampshire by geographic area in the last 10 years. Again, the Hispanic population, I think, and its makeup is an important part of what's going on in the rest of the country. It's somewhat important in New Hampshire, but not as important. And the Hispanic population, as you can see by the map, is, again, concentrated in southern New Hampshire along the Merrimack Valley, up around Dover, Rochester, and then, you know, in the in what are New Hampshire's cities, metropolitan areas, Lebanon, Hanover, Claremont, and so on. Go to the next slide. This, again, is census data. It shows us where the seasonal homes are in New Hampshire, and not surprisingly, as you might think, they're concentrated around in the center of the map, Lake Winnipesaukee and up into the White Mountains, and then over on the left-hand side over at Lake Sunapee.
I was really surprised to see Pittsburgh.
Right. And quite a few seasonal homes in the northernmost part of New Hampshire as well. And what you're looking at there is, this is, again, sort of to underline what we've just been talking about, you're looking at the portion of the population that's age 65 or older in New Hampshire. That's the line. And then the number of people that are in New Hampshire of that age group, that's the bars. And really the message here is that the last two bars are the forecast. Everything before that is actual data. You know, the silver tsunami, this group of people that are going to be age 65 or older, it's coming. It's not here yet, but it's going to come, and it's going to come fairly quickly, and we're going to see a big increase, a 10% percentage point increase in the portion of the population that's over the age of 65 in the next 10 years.
Right. And I think that has implications, again, as we spoke of earlier, for the cultural changes that we're going to see. Do you see, for example, I was thinking of things, perhaps simple things like street signs that are probably going to have to be larger.
Right.
Risers in construction, stair risers that are probably going to have to be a little bit lower, which is going to increase the cost of construction.
Absolutely right.
I mean,
a friend of mine told me about a demographic study the other day where they were asking people in their 60s what they really wanted. And I think, you know, some of the sort of planning ideas have been, well, we have to provide, you know, transportation for people in their older years. We have to think about public transportation and easier ways of getting around. And the number one thing that people over the age of 65 want is bigger street signs.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? Yeah.
So they want to keep driving. They want to, I think that's a characteristic that will stay with this population. They want to be mobile, and they want to be able to control their own mobility.
Another implication, I think, that we may not have considered, we haven't considered it here certainly today, but the idea of a migration from the suburbs, older folks moving from the suburbs into an urban center where they could acquire some of the things, the services that you were just speaking of.
Right, and I think we're starting to see that again too. There's some very good demographic data from this census which suggests that there's been a migration back into central cities. I think for a lot of reasons, partly because of the amenities available in large urban areas, partly because urban areas, frankly, there's been a lot of investment in trying to increase the livability and the mobility within urban areas. And I think even Studies I've seen that have suggested that if you had a portion of the population living in the suburbs and a portion of the population living in an urban area, living in an urban area is probably greener. It's probably more environmentally friendly than living in the suburbs, where, again, you're probably relying on your own transportation, driving a car around, making trips to the grocery store and to other things. Whereas in an urban area, you're relying on public transportation that's probably, in net, more energy efficient than in the suburbs.
Now, that will have implications on real estate markets, won't it?
It sure will. I don't think that suburban areas will necessarily decline, but they're probably, what will happen is they won't grow as fast as they have been.
Okay. Good. I kept you away from this.
So again, just one more. I think that there's, okay, that, so what you're looking at there is, again, darker means a higher value. You're looking at the makeup of the population by county, or the percent over the age of 65 in 2010, that's on the left, and the forecast for 2030, that's on the right. The oldest area in New Hampshire, the oldest county, is going to be Carroll County. That's the White Mountains, North Conway. Mm-hmm. Almost 50% of the population will be over the age of 65, or expected to be, in 20 years. And, that'll be the highest percentage in New Hampshire. But the other thing I think this slide tells you is that every area is expected to have twice as many, or twice the portion of the population over the age of 65 as it does now.
Right. So again, as we start to think about the social services that we're going to need, the health services that we're going to need. I don't know if you've done any looking at the types of health.
Well, I think that's a very big issue, and we have looked at aging in healthcare and how that's going to affect the healthcare delivery system. Some of the simulations that we've run have suggested that right now, Medicaid, the state Medicaid program, about 25% of that goes towards people over the age of 65, assuming there were no other change in. Other than the increased portion of the population over the age of 65, that will probably get close to consuming 50% of the Medicaid dollars that the state spends in the next, by the year 2030. It's got implications for the correction system. The older prisoners have more health issues. It's got implications for the service delivery system and hospitals. So there are a lot of things that this is going to impact.
Incredibly, the time has gone by so quickly.
It's amazing, huh?
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
I really appreciate it. And I think the things that we took out of this was there's definite implications and challenges for the future, for the over 65 group, but there's also a great deal of opportunity in the future for that group. Thanks very much again for being with us.
Pleasure being here.
And I hope that you'll be with us the next time when we're on The Long View. Thank you for joining us today.